Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. So, everybody, welcome to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. And this week I'm in conversation with a friend of mine. It's actually a friend. So often I do friends, Corinne Griffiths. Now, Corinne and I, we have been work colleagues. Let me give you a little background. Oh, I don't know. Well over 15 years ago, I think, we were work colleagues. And she popped up in my social media feed out of the blue. And just a question, so literally that said, you look like you're living your life. You know, I'd love to have a chat. And I'm like, oh, shit. Excuse me, sorry, shouldn't say that on podcast. But anyway, so I thought, anyway, what the hell? Let's just start having the conversation. So, and it was like we had been colleagues, we'd seen each other last week. So you know, it was all good. But what really intrigued me about Corinne is that when we were doing our Zoom call and we were talking, there was something very different about her, and it was like the elephant in the room for me. And that the fact that she had a shaved head. And I was absolutely intrigued. I'm like, look, I'm going to have to say this, you know, are you ill? You know, I actually thought she was ill. And she said no, and proceeded to tell me a little bit about what had been happening to her over the past few years. So it's a slightly different tact with our conversation this week. We're going to talk about her career because she's still been highly successful. But I also want to talk to her about one of the things from a confidence perspective, especially with women, is the connection with beauty and confidence and all the things that beauty, the connotations that beauty holes from your hair, your complexion, your features. So that's why I'm quite excited to have this conversation with Corinne this week. And plus, it's been very, very topical. I've seen a couple of celebrities coming out. Tamar Braxton quite recently shaved her hair and stuff like that. I saw another young DJ from the UK who'd had hair transplants. So I think it's something that's going to come up very much over the next few years, where we have been following the beauty line with getting our extensions, our wigs and stuff like that. So I think it's been a very interesting conversation. So that was a very long intro for me unusually. So before I kick off, I'm going to ask Corinne to introduce herself and tell us a little bit more about her. Corinne.
Hello. Thank you very much, Janice, for inviting me. I'm very excited. And this is a fantastic opportunity to you know, talk to you as always. But myself, I've been working as a change in comms consultant for the last 10 years. And I've been sort of self-employed, you know, and working with different clients around that space and helping, you know, individuals and organizations through change. And, you know, that can be on a small level or global level. So, you know, and kind of like my key sort of business stuff, and at the same time helping people through communications, and you know, that's a topic in itself, how to communicate, best ways to communicate, all those kind of things. And sort of my last sort of 10-year career has been, you know, based around that. And I think what's interesting around that piece is that change for me really in doing this role is such a complex conversation and situation for people. It's not easy to make a change. Sometimes people think it is, but actually it's not on an individual level. And so for me, I'm really sort of an advocate for helping people think about something they want to change, no matter how small that is or how big that is, and really sort of coaching them around how you get from A to B, really.
So most of the scenarios for change for you is in more of the corporate setting. But and I'm just as we're talking and I'm listening to you, yes, it could be the corporate setting, but depending on the size of the business, are there situations where it also becomes very personal? Because if the way I'm going with this is that if you're a small organization that you have grown and you have expanded, we appreciate you have to go through change, but the change can also be very personal for you as well as the organization.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key thing around that organizational piece. It's that it's made up of individuals that go through change themselves. And that can be personal or through the organisation. And actually the impact that sometimes personal change has for people. And so there's sometimes a two-layered effect, really, when you think about change, because actually all of us are going through different things in our own personal life. And how do you help individuals through that? And then corporates want you to also get these people to change, to do things in their organisation. So it's always important to understand an individual aspects of change as well as the corporate side.
Okay, excellent. So in that journey, what has been the most satisfying challenge you've had to overcome?
I think the most satisfying for me is my own personal change, because in order to help other people, you've got to understand your own journey and how you manage change yourself to be a real advocate for it.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes in your own life, if you have situations happen, and I've had a situation happen a couple of years ago where I lost my brother through bereavement.
Right.
That was a massive personal change, and that can also change what you think you're going to be doing with other people and how you want to lead your life. So I think it's really understanding your own personal change in order to help others.
And how do you get to do that?
Yeah, really good question, Janice. I think it's about seeking the expertise of others. You know, in my own personal change, I went to seek the expertise of others.
Right.
And sometimes I don't think people think they need to do that, to seek, you know, support around change.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think people think they can just do it themselves. And some people can, depending on how big it is. But actually, it's really seeking the support of others, whether that be someone professionally or someone that you kind of know that can help you through that. I think that's really being sort of vulnerable and honest around how you feel and taking that plunge to think, I might need some help around this change.
Yeah, I hear that. But in our society, especially, and I'm going to talk about the Black society, we are not very good at asking for help. It's seen as a stigma. It's seen, you know, even me as a coach trying to take women through the various change for them from a confidence perspective and stuff like that. The value of having that external support isn't yet recognized or I suppose one word, cherished or valued, that's the one I'm looking for, valued as such in our community. Mm-hmm. So how would you get past that, or how do you deal with that? Or have you had situations, and I'm asking lots of questions, where that has been the situation?
Yeah, I think it's been making sure that as if you've gone through a personal change, is being an advocate for that in your community or with people. For me personally, you know, I'm an advocate for change. So opportunities for me to talk about that in my casual conversations or people that I know, that's what, for me, I look at it from a virally, you try and grow that virally, because you have to touch one person in order for them to move and change someone else. So I think for me, I look at it from a viral perspective more than actually I've got to go out and tell the whole world, because, you know, it's more about you touching one person at a time is how I feel.
So how have you done that? How have you personally done that?
You know, I've done it in such a way where I've been really sort of informal about it.
Right.
I was at a funeral the other week. And it's a friend's funeral, a friend's mother's funeral. And I'm chatting, it was primarily a Black funeral.
Yeah.
And I was chatting to two guys, and they're friends of my brother's. And I was just chatting to them. I hadn't met them before.
Okay.
And what was interesting was they were talking about, you know, the jobs that they do. And, you know, one was doing, you know, a forklift driving, and one was trying to do something, you know, with children. And it was quite clear to me, just in this casual conversation, that they had no idea really to how to kind of move their things that they would like to do forward. Right. And actually the access and the conversation was so rich, because I was kind of saying, oh, well, you know, you want to do stuff around graphics. You know, I know people that might be able to help you with that. And it was, for them, it was like a light bulb moment. Cause like, oh, we don't really get to talk to one. They thought women.
Right.
And thinking more about how we help each other.
Okay.
And so I said, well, you know, I'm happy to come to your house. Just make me dinner.
Yeah.
And I can do a session with you and just show you kind of some steps on how you move things forward.
Right.
With what you're thinking, but just really simple, really casual. And from his perspective, it was like, whoa, would you really do, you know, wow. And I was like, well, yeah, because this is about enabling us, because ultimately if I enable you, you'll enable me.
Right.
You know, you'll move through a change. And if that change is for you, ultimately you're going to talk about it to somebody else.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, so for me, I don't go in with my business head to people going, right, you know, this is how you do change. And it's more about sharing your personal journey.
Right.
And that has to resonate with people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such an individual thing. It has to resonate. You have to have that connection. And it was great because we had this conversation for a good hour, you know, about what they wanted to do and all the blockers that they had in front of them around life and having children and working 60 hours a week. They had all of these blockers, and, you know, you just use some key principles that you take from business into personal to help them think, okay, how do you unravel that? And I think you just, use those. You wherever you are in your day-to-day life, I think you can touch and change the conversation.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. Last night I was at a networking event, and I'd met somebody who I'd known, and she was explaining to me that she had just, you know, finished her relationship, et cetera, et cetera. And she was very nervous about, she wants to move forward, but her conversation to me was that, well, one of the people that presented that evening was a relation to her ex-husband, blah, blah, blah. And I turned around and I use the acronyms as opposed to the words I said. I looked her straight in the face and go, WTF, does it matter? You know, because that person's living her life, but you are stunting yours because of what other people
absolutely
think. And you have to get past that, because you can't live your life for other people. You have to live your life for yourself.
Absolutely.
So big kudos to you to going out there and spreading that word. So Corinne, has there been a time you've confronted a challenge, and again, work or personal, and things have just gone horribly wrong? And how do you cope with those situations from a confidence perspective? How do you get your confidence back?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a really a simple one here, which was when I tried to train for the half marathon.
I have been there.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm giving this one, because I was thinking, you know, I was reflecting on different challenges you could go through. I was working with a client and this, that, and I thought, actually, I had a challenge here, which is to train for the half marathon. And I saw people running and I wanted to get fit. And when I talked to runners, they were telling me they love running.
Yes.
And I thought, yeah, do you know what? I could do this. So I started to train for the half marathon. I didn't enjoy running. So I was doing these training schedules, half-heartedly training.
Yeah.
And when it came to the day of the race, you can imagine that after a very small amount of time, I wasn't really able to run the race. I mean, it took me 4 hours. And the bit I run the best was the last bit where I could get the foil.
And it's a finishing line. You could see the
finishing
end.
Line. I mean, a few friends said to me, you look fantastic for someone who has run 13 miles. And the realization.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, because I know exactly. I am a big runner, and I've done marathons and half marathons. And I always have an inner mantra of, no one sees me walk across the finish line, no matter how mashed up I am. So sorry, I'm laughing.
I looked fantastic. I didn't look like I'd run a stitch. And, you know, and I always remember thinking to myself, if you want to do something and you have to train for it, you have to go, you have to be in for the long haul. Yeah. And if you don't like it, it's 10 times harder. 10 times harder if you don't like something that you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, you can think to yourself, well, I tried and succeed. But actually, for me, I think to myself, I didn't even like running. You know, simple. Right. I tried it out, and instead of thinking I've tried it out and I've done a few miles and not, I tried to just carry on thinking, well, other people do it, I can do it. Right. So I think when you put your mind to something, you've got to also love it. And because I didn't love running, I still thought I could do it. And I think, I mean, I ran with my family members who left me on this run.
Hey, look, we've got personal best to get. I'll be with them.
Yeah. So what I'm really happy about is that I tried to have a go at something that was not in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Tick, you know, you can do your tick. I think what, if you're going to do it, put your mind to it and try and do everything you can to achieve it.
Right.
You know, because that's your second message, isn't it, really? Like, well, did I do everything to try and achieve it? Well, no, because I didn't train for it properly.
Yeah, yeah.
So ultimately, if you don't put your focus into something, you might not get the outcome you're looking for.
But I think just to add to that, I think it wasn't so much you getting almost liking running, it's understanding what your motivation was.
Yeah.
Was your motivation strong enough? Because whether you liked it or not, I've been a runner for years, so I totally understand. And I'll be honest, I can't run now and totally miss it. So as we were talking off camera, I have had to try and find an alternative because my body's telling me, you cannot run anymore, Janice. You need to do something different. And I've always had an aversion to yoga.
Mm.
So I have started a 30-day yoga challenge. Anybody's listening, you can find, you'll be able to find me on Facebook when I'm doing my lives because I'm going to follow myself on Facebook. But and today, it was a 30-day challenge. That's on YouTube. And today the first thing was, she's got a theme to each day, this lady has. And she said, what is your motive?
Mm.
And that is very, very key, is what is your motive? So I think if your motive isn't strong enough, you don't believe in your motive, that's what makes it, because you don't understand how the two go together. So it makes it very difficult.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And I think my motivation was, I want to get fit. That was the motivator. What I hadn't really worked out is there are other things you can do to get fit that you enjoy.
Yeah.
And if you do, sometimes you've got an end goal, but the journey, as they say, it's the steps you take on the way is what you want to enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to just have the end goal and then you're not even enjoying what you're doing to get to that end goal.
Right.
So I think, you know, that for me was my key learning is that, you know, you can have an end goal. You can think, oh, I want to, you know, travel the world, but it's going to cost me like £50,000. What work am I going to do? And I need to enjoy it because it's going to take me 5 years to do that.
Yeah.
It's so important to, you know, really look for the things that you enjoy in order to achieve those end games.
Right. So, Karim, what has been your biggest career triumph then? We'll forget about the half marathon. Mm. We know that wasn't, that didn't work. What has been your biggest career triumph?
I think, yeah, my biggest career triumph was actually having the opportunity to start work on a startup business in Australia. And it was such a fantastic opportunity back when I went for this role, because I actually thought, I'm not going to get this role. I'm this black female in a business where in my level there wasn't very many.
Yeah.
And... there was a couple of colleagues who were going for this position to go and open this business as part of in Australia, who could go straight away, and I couldn't because I was getting married. So I had like a lead time. So I thought, okay, I've got some things against me, but I want to show that, you know, I want to do this, and I've got an ambition to move up the chain in this business. So I went for the interview and didn't think I was going to get it. Due to the fact that when I knew the other candidates and I thought, well, they've been in the business longer than me, they can go straight away. I've got a bit of baggage because I'm going to have to wait till I get married and go with my husband. So there's a cost. So I had to put all these kind of things thinking I wouldn't get it. And when I had my interview and everything, and then my boss said to me, I think they're going to offer you the role. I then went into a bit of shock because I was like, okay, so that means I could actually be working in Australia. And secondly, when they did offer me the role, they said to me, how soon can you go after your wedding? And that was like 2 days after getting married, I had to fly. Wow. So for me, there was two things I think that came to me when I got that role. One was having the confidence to go for a role that I felt that somebody else would get. I'd already put other people in, and I kind of felt that as a female and as a black female, I probably wouldn't be representative, you know, to go. So I had my own individual, you know, feelings around that when I went for that job. Two, I was going to Australia and a few people were like, oh, well, you know, there's, you know, it's not at that time, you know, it's not that diverse in terms of the cultural mix over in Australia. You know, how are you going to feel living over there? And I was like, well, I still want to go for it. And I think three, you know, having the opportunity, which I, you know, to go halfway across the world and work on a startup business was phenomenal, really. I think it changed my view on living somewhere else, living in a different country, learning a different culture, leaving all your family 24 hours away, leaving all your friends, being with my husband every day. Oh my God, that was probably the biggest challenge. Wasn't the work. It's like, oh my God, if we have an argument, I've got nowhere to go.
People forget about it. And it's a mechanism.
Absolutely. You know, it was just going to be me and my husband, and that was it.
And back then, I think technology wasn't, if I remember rightly, when it was, the technology wasn't as advanced as it is now. So,
no.
I think you probably had mobile phones, but that was about it. We didn't data back then. Sorry, people. We're kind of dating ourselves here. But it wasn't the data-driven technology we have right now.
Yeah. So I think that situation, you know, was career defining, but also personally defining, because it freed my mind of what I maybe think I'm being perceived to others. Yeah. So sometimes you perceive yourself a certain way and why you don't think you're going to get a real role, and you can play to that, thinking, well, black female, I'm not going to get it. But actually, others being perceived, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And so it freed some of that baggage, I suppose, where you grow up as a female, a black female, and thinking that you some things you're just not going to get because of that. But actually, you know, that's not always the case. So it made me, on a personal level, approach things, I say, differently after that. You go in, whether you're a, you know, black female or not, so you're going in with your, you know, your best that you can be, and it's up to that person whether they see that in you or not.
Yeah, and I think it's overcoming your limiting belief, because I'm hearing there, you gave yourself, you told yourself, they didn't have to do it for you. You did it for yourself.
Yeah,
you know, and then you almost have to go for the process. Well, they usually limiting beliefs. The process I would take clients through is that, okay, this is your limiting belief. What's the proof that can't happen?
Mm.
You didn't give yourself your proof. You had to get somebody else did. You know.
Yes.
So yeah. So again, how long were you in Australia?
I was there a year.
Wow.
I was there a year, and it's such a big step, because, as I said, we got married and we had to fly out 2 days later and had to cancel my honeymoon. You know, I had a honeymoon booked, so I had to cancel my honeymoon in Italy and head off. And start this kind of new life there, really, and get used to, you know, support just the two of you support, but also this country and this place where I learned so much from all the different, you know, diverse, you know, cultural people I met, people who like did traveling quite a lot. So you've got to just learn so much about people who freed their minds around.
Right. And there's a couple of questions I'm going to have around there. The first one, let me get after the listeners are listening. Did the husband survive the year?
Yes. Yes, he did.
And secondly, what did you learn about yourself through this whole process?
I think definitely I'd learned that feel free to do what you want to do and do it for you. It's always like, for me, just it felt free, because I had kind of maybe, you know, lived where I'm living in the UK with that hat on, going to my job and happy with that and thinking that's my world, and then being transported completely somewhere different where it's a completely different world. And I learned to that you grow so much from those experiences that make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I love that, because that's a trait, you know. I've had a couple of conversations with doing these interviews, is that it's, you learn how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
And it's a skill set that we as women really need to embrace, because that's how we get to explore new opportunities and open our mind to what is possible, as opposed to restricting ourselves to the here and now. And I love what you said about doing the study, you know, looking it for you, because I have a little mantra that, you know, is do you, is be you, do you, be you for you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, again, it's not selfish, but it is about putting yourself first. And again, we're not very good at doing that. Now, Corinne, from a confidence perspective, now, and this is where we're getting to the meaty bit now. So I know you're incredibly confident in what you do. You're very accomplished in your role. But at the top of the podcast, I talked about the obviously the life or image changing. I don't know if it's life changing. You tell me. But you changed your image very much from the hair perspective. We were talking about, you know, the connection of beauty and confidence. So talk us through that element of your journey. Tell the listeners as to what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, for the last, I think for the last 20-ish years, I've been a person who kind of, like, you know, with hairstyles, you know, back in the day, you know, people could have extensions and, you know, weaves and everything. So that's what I used to do, is like have extensions, have weaves. And actually it was because I used to love experimenting with different hairstyles. Nothing more, nothing less. But also there's this piece about when you'll be grown up that your head's tough, your hair's tough, it's difficult to manage your hair. So I think subconsciously there was like, there's an ease of dealing my hair with extensions. So I think it was twofold when I reflect. Right. But at the time, there was no big thought process about it. So there are my hair extensions and stuff. And basically, a couple of years ago, I got to a point where I was sick of buying hair. I was sick of buying batches of hair. I was sick of buying, like, wigs and things. And I thought, okay, well, actually, I think I want to just go back to having my own hair. Whatever capacity that looks like. So when I started to explore that, I realized that actually there are some challenges that from potentially having areas of maybe alopecia, from traction alopecia, and also kind of female pattern baldness, which is can be hereditary.
Right.
So I wasn't aware of that, because obviously I'm putting the wigs on and the hair on and all of that. But naturally, as I wanted to go to my natural hair, it wasn't going to be an opportunity for me to do that. It wasn't not something that was feasible for me because of the fact that the hair growth wasn't going to grow.
And the traction baldness, just explain what traction baldness would be. Baldness is.
So traction alopecia can be if you use hair extensions a lot, and that can be, and you can have weaves, or the way that the extensions put in your hair, it can pull on the hair itself and pull the follicles out, so therefore the hair doesn't grow back in those places. And if you have that over a long period of time, that can actually damage that, you obviously your scalp, and then your hair doesn't grow back.
Okay.
So that's one aspect that I didn't think about when I was growing up. Which you don't. And actually not everybody has that problem. So, you know, some people, their hair grows fine and stuff like that. But I had aspects of that. And then the second part is called female pattern baldness. Males have it, you know, men. Yeah. Got the bald head in the middle bit. So same, but it's for a female. And that can be, that's hereditary. You know, my mom has the same thing.
Right.
In the middle of her head. So ultimately, when I was trying to experiment with styles, I was trying to experiment with hairstyles that could use my own hair, but cover areas that had got, you know, were thin. So that came as I was a bit, you know, not happy about that, and thinking, am I going to have to wear wigs all the time? Not really feeling that, you know, just was fed up of it.
Right.
So I'd been to do some exploratory clinics, ideas at clinics, whether I was going to have, you know, the transplant, which really doesn't look nice, and wasn't really feeling that as an option. And then I came across a procedure. I was researching on the internet and on YouTube, and I came across a procedure called scalp micropigmentation, which is quite a big, long word, but in short, it's a form of head tattooing.
Right.
And basically the procedure uses a form of tattooing, but so it's like a camouflage, really, like you would do if you maybe had your eyebrows people have it for their eyebrows and stuff, but they can use that for your scalp, on your scalp.
Okay.
And I found this really good clinic, and went to meet them. I mean, I went to research three different clinics, and once I'd found the right one, which, you know, high standards, been in the industry a long time, and obviously I don't have any tattoos anywhere else on my body, so I was very, you kind of cynical around, you know, what you're doing. Plus they were male as well, so I was like, do you really know what this means for a female? You know, it's my head, you know, you're going to be tattooing or putting dots on my head, you're going to get this right? You know, because once it's done, it's done.
Yes.
But I had a fantastic hour and a half consultation with them. They showed me around. They'd already done a previous female through hair loss, thinning hair loss. So I was kind of confident that I was going to go with this procedure.
Okay.
And so I had three sessions done, and that was it for me. And I am as free as a bird.
And, and it looks great.
I am free as a bird. I can go swimming without having to think of my hair, wig or extensions or putting a scarf on. I can, you know, get up in the morning and just go. Don't have to worry about rain or anything on your hair, yeah.
Which is fabulous. I think for what I'd love to explore more that is that as women we have such a strong connection with the looks and hair being a paramount part of, you know, our beauty, how we perceive beauty. Mm-hmm. I remember my dad telling me, girl, your hair is your beauty, it's your crown. Yes, glory.
That's exactly what my mom said when she saw what I was going to do.
Yes, you know, yes. So how do you deal from a confidence perspective, you know, to be, I mean, for want of a better word, a bald female?
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, it's kind of, I suppose it's 50-50 your choice. There are obviously some women who have no choice because of illness whatever. But, you know, we have, there's such a connection between us females, confidence and hair and beauty.
Absolutely.
How did you deal with that?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I didn't realise how much of a topic of a conversation this would be for people when I decided to do this. I was nervous about doing it. I think because I was thinking what the hair association is with me, you know, that hair is beauty, and when you have the long hair extensions and stuff like that, and different colours, different cuts and everything, you know, I had an image of that's what I see all the time. That's what is out there.
Yeah.
So when I first did the cutting, shaving off the hair, I decided to do it and go on holiday.
Right.
And the reason for that was because I think I wanted to have confidence in it myself without anybody's view or anybody who knows me, anybody else's view of what they think or what I've done, and actually deal with it kind of myself, trying it myself.
Yeah.
So I made sure when I did it, I went on holiday. And so I went on holiday where nobody knew me. And therefore, I was able to just wear it.
Settle into it.
Funny enough, I would get people ask the question like, oh god, I'd really love to do that, it's absolutely boiling here, I'd really love to shove my hair out. And women actually were the ones that would be much more kind of forward in terms of, oh, you must be really confident to do that. So it had a twofold effect. It was more people thought, you've got to have confidence to do what you do. I would love to do, but I just wouldn't have the confidence to do it. So other people looked at it as a very confident and bold move,
right?
To shave your hair off. And some other people looked at it as like, I'm making a statement, whether that be a black power statement for women. No, I'm not making a statement. I'm just trying to shave my, you know, it's cut. Some people would look at it and go, and this was, I'm talking more women, would be, you know, looking at it from the perspective of, as you said, have you been ill?
Yeah.
Because this, what, you know, And also, I would also get asked the question, what made you do that? Which is quite an interesting question, really, that you just don't have hair. And they go, so what made you do it? And I said, well, why not? Simple. Why not? Because if you have an association with it, fine. But I just, you know, at that point, I just thought, I don't, there's no big story that, you know, I want to, you know, share at this point. I was trying to go through personally myself, which is I want to just do this because I don't want to, like, you know, think about the hair thing anymore. I want to go, you know, that's just for me. That's what I wanted to do. But as time's gone on and realizing that actually for women, the association with hair and actually the perception to men as well.
Right.
For men, when they saw me, that was a different kettle of fish as well, because you've got men who, you know, the black men would be like, I would love it if more of the sisters would do this, you know? So they'd give that kind of comment and it looks really good. So you'd get that kind of stuff. You'd also get the comments if it was from, if it was a white males or that you kind of didn't get a comment. So right. They keep looking at you. That's something radical has changed since I last saw you, Corinne, but they wouldn't comment. So that was interesting that you could see,
right,
the, you know, what they're looking, but they're not saying anything because I think they're thinking, am I not well? So it's different cultures actually gave you different kind of different thoughts about how, what they thought about what you had done, which is so, you know, interesting and intriguing.
Yeah.
And actually the hair loss piece has come back, compassed from, for me, more about actually this has changed kind of my life in the sense of the freedom and liberation to actually just get up and go and live, not really care about what somebody thinks. I did it for me. Right. And that first thing is like, I did it for me, really. I didn't, you know, as you said, it was something I wanted to do, is to go with my own hair. And actually, I have got my own hair. So
right.
This procedure has enhanced the look of it. That is all.
Right.
So for women who have hair loss, you don't have to shave your head off to have this. If you have thinning hair, it's a basically, they, you know, darken the scalp so that it just blends in. So it's like a camouflage, really.
Right.
So that's
right.
Kind of for me, like, yeah, I want it to just, I want to have my own hair, but yeah, it's just in camouflage with it, like we do with anything else.
Well, I think the bald head is very topical. So something just flashed into my head because obviously quite recently, for the anybody who follows celebrities, Tamar Braxton just shaved all her hair off. She got tired of the whole weeds and the wigs thing. You have, there was another young DJ I'd read about recently in the UK who'd lost her hair again through traction alopecia. She had gone through, looked like a very painful hair transplant. But what just flashed into my mind is Black Panther. One of the leading actresses. I can't remember her name, but she literally just flashed into my head.
Yes, thinking, I was going to mention that. Yeah.
I didn't even recognize. I just realized she doesn't have any hair either. She's bald. Yeah. And it didn't till just now actually into my head. So I think it's a very powerful statement. I also think you have to have the right shape head, personally.
That's what somebody else said. It's like, well, you've got the right shape head. I went, oh, that's a nice thing.
but surely, and I know you talk about confidence and stuff like that, but knowing the connection you had and you how you were so connected with weeds and stuff like that, I think it was still a bold move. I personally think it was still a bold move. You didn't have any doubts from a confidence perspective? You didn't?
I you know, when I said to you before, there's sometimes you have a catalyst.
Yeah.
In life. So when a couple of years ago, I'd got fed up of the fact that I was paying so much money for the wigs. You know, I was paying like, because the quality of the hair, so I'm thinking I need to find a wig that's got the right quality so I don't have to keep buying, you know, different wigs or hair extensions. I'd done this for, you know, near on 15 years. So I was fed up of doing
fortune.
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to think how much I've spent on hair over the years.
Yeah.
So that was one catalyst, which was like, I'm fed up of this, you know, of having to do this or actually I'm ready to move on from this kind of like hair thing. And then the second catalyst was when I had lost, when I lost my brother a couple of years ago.
Right.
You know, there's for me, a catalyst was like, does it really matter what anybody thinks? You know? So it was like, when you have a life-changing situation, you start to think about what's really important and what isn't important.
Yeah.
And what people think of my head and hair is not important to me because you get a different leveler about importance in life.
Yeah.
So you know, for me, that was another catalyst. Did I have any reservations? I think I had reservations from an old school thinking, which is I don't kind of fit and look like the corporate person who goes to a meeting. I don't look like anybody like that in terms of sitting and having long hair, even as a black woman sitting at a board desk or a leadership team. I look different and I suppose a bit more radically different. So, because the hair can be something where it gives you that I'm still fitting in piece. And I think that probably is another piece that, you know, that's why it is quite a big step, because growing up with the hair extensions, you have it because you're just used to seeing, you know, people with it, stars with it, famous people with it, black women with it, with the extension, the hair, and you think hair is your beauty. You're told hair is your beauty.
So,
I definitely think there are a few stages to doing this where I thought, well, it's not, I don't have the freedom with this whole hair thing. It's limiting me now. Before I felt it was a freedom, but when I want to go swimming, I couldn't really go swimming without thinking about the hair. If I wanted to go to a sauna, a steam room, a spa day, I'm taking off the wig, I'm putting it in a bag, I'm putting on a headscarf, because I'm doing all of these things to sort out the head thing, and I was just done with it. I just thought, I don't want to do this anymore. So, I do recognise that people see it as a big step and a big, like, oh my gosh, you know, I couldn't do something like that because of the association. But I have actually found it very liberating that actually the association is, then you're putting it back into somebody else's eyes as opposed to your own. Right. And it's about how you see yourself.
And it's interesting what you said about not fitting into the corporate mould, because let's take this back a few years ago, even when you talk about going to Australia, you weren't fitting the mould then. You were a black woman going into a realm that, you know, that traditionally wasn't where we were supposed to be. We didn't have a seat at that table. So it's very interesting that even though you've made that journey, you were still looking at ways that you have to fit in.
Yes, you still absolutely.
You still have to fit in.
Yeah, and I think not fitting in is a hard thing to do. You know, that's why you can't take it lightly that not fitting in is easy, because it's not. And when that's why I say change, people sometimes go, well, you know, to make change is easy, and it depends what your change is. But change isn't easy when it comes fundamentally to what you've been brought up with, what you've been told, and it's intrinsic, you know, that the society we've been brought up in, and where you fit in society as a black female. So I think there's definitely peace around, when somebody asks you the question, well, how come you feel like this now? And you go, well, there's a whole life experience piece.
Yes.
And, you know, part of you wishes that, I wish I'd have had this life experience and just shortened it so I had it 20 years ago, that confidence and that. You do, you know, life experience brings you this. But I think that, you know, what I've learned is, you know, if you can help people have some of this confidence a lot earlier in their life, so that they can, you know, really push through, you know, feeling uncomfortable, I think that would just be amazing. And what you're doing, obviously, Janice, to bring that to the table is great with this phenomenal woman.
Thank you. So let me just round this little bit of the topic, because I know we could talk for hours on this.
So,
as I said, you recognised it, you're a lady of a certain age, which is fine. But I personally now, I live in the Caribbean, and the weaves, the attractions, the everything is paramount. And I see girls as very young girls, I can see with traction alopecia, because their mothers have started plaiting their hair and stuff like that. Mm. And I find it painful. I find it painful to look, because I can see what we're setting the children up for going forward. But for any young women, because again, if they've started that age and their parents started that age and they're in their 20s, and this is where they start really probably getting very cognizant of beauty and stuff, you know, the social media age and stuff like that. So for young women, or women going through, you know, who are about to face or probably avoiding facing what's coming, what advice would you give them from that respect?
I think for them not to feel like that this is their only choice, and that
there are lots of natural hair movements out there now. There are so many community, you know, you only have to go on Instagram or Facebook and put in natural hair. And there are lots of women, young now, there's a bald head movement, you know, there's a natural hair movement. So there's lots of places these people can go to see people that are doing this. Because I think that's the thing, it's the imagery, it's to... When I look on, you know, I want to see people that feel comfortable with different hairstyles. And the natural hair movement's a brilliant one because it does have just women with natural hair or different kinds of hairstyles, and they're all funky and brilliant and different colours and using, you know, material in hair and stuff. So there's lots of different, you know, on social media areas now, like in Instagram, as I say, and Facebook, where you can find forums, where you can look and see people and think, oh, okay, you know, because I think that's the hardest part. You know, when I was growing up, I had, you know, All Saints and Eternal as I don't know if everybody doesn't know those people, but that's who was around at that time.
Yeah,
you know.
Look it up, Google it, people, Google it.
Yeah, Google it, or even Destiny's Child at that time. All of them were wearing extensions. So you just, naturally, you just go with what you see, you know.
Yeah.
Human nature.
Yeah, and we all want to fit in. Yeah. And there was always the stigma around, like you say, the good hair, the bad hair, the relaxer and stuff and stuff like that. So I totally empathize.
So I definitely for that. And it is hard to go against the grain. You know, people think, because I've shaved my hair, I'm either in fashion or I'm a singer. You know, that is what people think. But I think it's our job to be in the places where you're bringing that knowledge and thinking, okay, well, actually, no, I don't. I sit in the corporate world, or no, I don't. I sit in this world, and no, I don't. You know, it's about trying to bring that to show people that, no, it's okay to be different. And actually, it's not that different.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So let's move on a little bit. Mm-hmm. So share with us, and now you've gone through this whole journey, so share with us a success quote or a mantra that you use and that's meaningful for you.
I'm going to say again, do it for you.
Yeah.
That is my mantra. Just do it for you. I sit and I see all the lots of different types, you know, but for me, it's always like, if you're going to do it for you.
Yeah.
And that's my mantra.
And you've managed to turn we were talking again off air. You've managed to turn this situation or the process you went through to your advantage. Now, I'm a very big believer that people talk about you have to look for success. Yeah. But I always think that before success becomes opportunity, and you have to identify the opportunity, be able to have your eyes open to see, well, wow, that's potential opportunity. And I can have the vision of what that looks like. And so now, you know, tell us about the journey, the clinic that you worked with, what your journey is with them right now.
Yeah, well, for me, I've been having a lot of conversations with them around the fact that they already, you know, explore hair loss, and there are women that, you know, a few women that have hair loss that go to this clinic. One of the, you know, we've been having quite a lot of conversations around, okay, how do we raise awareness around hair loss? And that this procedure can help women with hair loss. And this is not about just fraction alopecia. This is women with, you know, who are going through the menopause. This is women with, you know, that can, children or young children you know, this is about, you know, people have hair problems regardless of whether they can use the extensions or not. How do we, you know, can work in partnership to raise awareness around this procedure? Because I don't know, you know, I only found this procedure through the internet on YouTube. And when I tell people about it, they haven't even heard of it. So I think it's quite prominent more so in the male market, because male baldness is, you know, common. And, there's no one bats an eyelid for male baldness. Yes. So actually, you know, for female, it's about trying to help women who, whether it be, as you say, through illness or through, you know, the extensions or whatever the circumstances are, this is an option for people. And where I've seen it done really well as well is that actually, if you do want to have extensions, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not an advocate for saying don't have extensions, because that's what I'm saying. It's more about just be aware of what they can do and what extensions can do, etc. But also be aware that if you are having problems with hair loss, here's somewhere which you can go to that can really make sure that you go to the right place to have this procedure done, really.
Right.
And you know, that clinic, which is kind of Bradwood Clinic in the UK, they've just, I personally had a fantastic journey in terms of them understanding the journey I was on as a female, but at the same time them experiencing this, because one of the technicians has also had to have this procedure done himself through a head burn.
Right.
It's not about just anybody doing this, it's about making sure the right person and the right opportunities there.
Excellent. So Corinne, we're wrapping up now, coming down to the last few questions. Looking back now, what advice would you give your teenage self?
Oh gosh. I think I would say to my teenage self, just try and be yourself.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, as my teenage self, I concentrated on being myself as much as I know myself now. So my teenage self would be, just try and draw strength from the person that you are, you know, and try and be yourself. It makes life a lot easier when you try to be yourself.
Excellent, excellent. Very true. It's hard trying to be somebody else. Very, very hard. So if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
Ooh, there's probably a couple of mentors. I think there's one that you probably, well, Oprah's one.
Yeah, Oprah's always popular.
Oprah's one. Janice, you're another one. Janice Sutherland's another one.
I'll take that.
There's another one. And there's another person, and actually she's called Nane Vega, actually.
Okay.
She's in the music world, and she's actually a DJ. And the reason why I like her, because she's creating a movement coming from music from like sort of Africa.
Right.
And she's really passionate about bringing people who are into music, who are younger people from the African continents and stuff, into music. So creating an opportunity. So that's one thing I love about her and her energy. The second part I love about her is obviously she's a yogi fitness type person, and I inspire to try and be fit.
Still on that journey.
So she's an Arnie Vega, and I just love her kind of the movement she's trying to create through music.
Yeah.
I think music brings a lot of people together.
Okay.
In a way that lots of other places don't. So those are kind of my two, one that you've heard and probably one that you've not.
Excellent. We'll put a link into her when we do the show notes.
Yeah.
So what are the three things, Corinne, that you've learned about yourself during your career?
I think the one thing is always continue to develop yourself. So always make sure that you continue to kind of look at your development and learn. So I think that's one thing I keep professing.
Yeah.
The second piece I think is try and reach for the unreachable.
Right.
So that's kind of try and go for things that you wouldn't typically go for and put yourself out there. And three, be a partner and be someone who advocates for others. I think that it's really important when you're working, no matter where you are, that like you and I haven't seen each other for so long, that you'll be an advocate for someone you haven't seen for 15 years. I think it's so important to remember all those people that you can be an advocate for and be an enabler for others.
Right. Beautiful. So what would you say your imperfections, and how do you embrace them?
None. Oh,
get real. Get a grip.
I think my imperfections is probably I don't probably take enough time to look after myself.
Okay.
So self-care in terms of more, I'm doing well with my mental health space. It's probably my physical health space, because I used to suffer from sort of anxiety. Right. So I'm pretty good with my mental health space and recognizing those things that stress. And how to manage that. But I think physical is really important, that, you know, your body's in harmony. Yeah. So I think that is one. Two, I think, is not trying to do too many things. Sometimes you have so many ideas.
Yeah.
And it's about really trying to refocus and focus on the things that are going to keep you going and the things that make enrich your soul. So I think those are probably a couple of things where I think, oh, I'm 1 minute I'm thinking about this and next minute I'm thinking about that, because I get so excited about life sometimes. So I think I could be better focused.
Right. And someone said to me the day, they sent me a Facebook post about how many tabs do you have open? And you know, sometimes you have hundreds of tabs, and I'm like,
Yes.
I'm really guilty of that. Close them, close ones down. If you haven't looked at them for a couple of days, you're not going to look at them anymore anyway. So just close them down, get rid. What's your advice for just basically maintaining work-life balance, that you don't burn out or neglect people that are close to you?
Work-life balance is really understanding all of the components that fit into your life.
Right.
And so what I mean by that is sometimes we just think about the hours we do at work and then, you know, what you do outside of that. But actually the whole work-life balance incorporates, understand the time you're spending with your friends, understand your kind of financial, you know, limits, the time that you're spending for yourself, and look at all of the aspects of your work-life balance and decide what's in and what's out and what percentage of time you can spend in that space. And it's taking all the components together, because sometimes I think we try and do everything at 100%. Oh, I've got to see my friends and my family. Oh, I want to do this. Yeah. Then you're overloaded. So right. For me, it's about work-life balance is really taking all the aspects of your life, making sure that, you know, if you're in a relationship, that's strong. If you're looking after yourself, that's strong. If you've got family, children, that's strong. You take all the components, but also know what's going to, you know, what you can give a lot of percentage to and what's going to have to drop, you know, because you can't do it all. So it's been really sort of clear and about that, so I think it's really important.
Okay. Yeah. And what's your definition of success?
Oh, you know, I love that question. Success for me is when you wake up in the morning and you're smiling. That is it.
Yeah.
I think if you get up in the morning each day, and you just have to be every single day, because, you know, some days you're not, but you get up the majority of time and you're smiling and you can laugh about something, to me, that's enrichment for the soul. That's all I think, you know, for me, success is. And that's for me, and it's a very personal thing, so.
Excellent. And lastly, what does it mean to you, Corinne, to be your own hero?
It means a lot to be an advocate for yourself, because who else is going to be that person? Who's going to be your champion? You have to be your own champion. You have to be comfortable with who you are, the imperfections as well as the good points. It's so hard to be comfortable with who you are, because there's so many external factors that we are bombarded all the time with, what's going on, and, you know, in social media, what your friends say, what your family say, what's going on, what other people are doing. So it's trying to kind of declutter that noise and be really centered and mindful of what's important for you, really. And I think that's really a hard thing to do, to just center yourself.
Excellent. So that was my last question.
That's my last question.
So if people want to get, I mean, like I say, it's a very topical situation, very topical, some of the aspects we talked about today. If people want to get in contact with you, are they able to connect with you at all?
Yeah, the best way to connect with me is just through my email, corinegriffiths@hotmail.co.uk. That's just what I say, come to me there, because the reason why is because as this has started to escalate a little bit in terms of the interest, you know, I'm starting to think about, okay, how can people reach me, you know, through whether it's Facebook and all of that. Yeah. So, yeah, that will be coming. But at the moment, I'm just like, yeah, just contact me. My email's there. Have a chat. Do a Skype, whatever.
Excellent. So thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been fabulous. No,
thank you.
Totally enjoyed it. Like I said, I always enjoy doing these interviews, but sometimes I enjoy more than others. But thank you so much for your time today, Corinne, and all the best for the future.
Thank you, Janice, and thank you to everyone out there who are listening.
So that was a fantastic conversation with Corinne Griffiths, and we touched on so many things there,
from the connection with confidence and beauty and hair and how she handled it, to being different, just being different in her career, being different in the activities and the opportunities that she was exposed herself to. So I really hoped you enjoyed that conversation. And if you do, which I know you did, please subscribe, rate, comment on iTunes, share it with somebody you know who you think would get some benefit out of it. In fact, what I'd love you to do is just take the time to share it with one woman that you know you think would benefit from hearing the journey that Corinne has gone through and hearing our conversation. And then you can rate, subscribe and review on iTunes, and we'll take it from there. So without further ado, that is me for the week, and I look forward to speaking to you another time. Bye for now.